Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing all right, Justin. How are you feeling tonight?
I'm doing good. What's going on with you, man? Any announcements?
Yes, I want to say we've been pushing our TikTok account and it's growing quite a bit now, which is nice. So thank you for all the follows. And also I wanted to say that it's been a little while, but Framed season 2, we're thinking about doing an update. So if you've enjoyed that and want an update, let us know, let Wondery know. And if you haven't listened to Frame Season 2, it's a deep dive into a case from the Southwest in the United States that's very fascinating. And I would highly suggest you listen to it.
So tonight's case, Aaron, should have probably came out before Halloween to continue our Halloween episodes, but we're putting it out after Halloween. So everyone's getting an extra Halloween bonus episode here.
Well, you make it sound like that's a bad thing.
I'm not. I'm saying it's a good thing.
Now, Halloween is great. And what's wrong with having two Halloween episodes?
This case, well, it takes place over a long period of time, but one of the murders happens on Halloween night. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about the October 31st, 2012 murder of Rebecca Gay. This happened in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Now, for people that don't know, Mount Pleasant, Michigan, that's in central Michigan. And around that time, the population was 26,000. Rebecca Gay was 24. Her parents were Thomas and Sally. She had one sister, Deborah, and two brothers, James and Aaron. She worked at Bo Rick's Hair Care before she was employed at the Goodwill store in Mount Pleasant and became a manager. She had a three-year-old son named Conway Cliff Kelly and was engaged to Aaron Quinn, and she and her mother lived next door to each other.
Now it's the night before Halloween. Everyone's getting ready for the big holiday.
It's at 2 a.m. when Rebecca hears a noise, and she gets up. Now, she ends up going down the hallway when she's confronted by an intruder, and this person starts striking her in the head. Now, she's not reported missing until 12 p.m. the next day, and it's because her coworkers, they're missing her. And they also, not only do they report her missing, but they start looking for her, and they find her car in the parking lot at the Barn Door, which is a bar at the corner of Coldwater and M20. So, of course, the police show up. They're talking with her coworkers, and they're getting a lot of information. And one of the things they bring up is Rebecca's mother was engaged to a man by the name of John White. And, of course, the police want to know, well, why is this of interest? And they said, well, he had made remarks before talking about how beautiful she was. And they found that suspicious. So they start looking into John White. John White is a pastor at a church.
Christ Community Fellowship Church.
So they head over to this church and they start speaking with the people there. And they're asking questions about John and about Rebecca. And some of these people told the police that John didn't treat Rebecca like other people, but he also didn't treat her like a daughter. He treated her like someone he was interested in. This is interesting because, you know, why is this pastor doing this? Is this odd behavior, don't you think?
I would think so. And I think he's a little old for her too.
Yes, Rebecca is 24 and John is in his 50s. One more disturbing bit of information comes out, which is some of the male members of this church told the police that John had told them things like, wouldn't you want that? When he was referring to Rebecca when she was around. So since Rebecca's missing, and because they also discover that John had spent a lot of time over at her place because he would help take care of her boy in the mornings when she had to get ready for work, they thought, well, let's start right there at home. That doesn't mean they're not searching for Rebecca. They are. So, of course, they need to put out information on her. Rebecca was described as a white female. She was approximately 5'3" and weighed 118 pounds. At the time, she had curly blonde hair that went just past her shoulders, and she had blue eyes. She was last seen wearing a blue top and black pants. There were three tattoos on her body, one of a circle of eagle feathers on her upper back, another on her hip that spells KISS, and a music clef with the word Conway on her left wrist. This information went out on November 1st. So it's about almost 24 hours since she was attacked in her home, as we told you. But the police are looking for her. They have no idea what happened. So the police, of course, have gone through Rebecca's place searching for evidence. Now, at the time, her son was not at home. He had been there the night before, but they discovered that John had taken the boy, dressed him up in his costume, and then met the boy's father in a parking lot to hand him over. That was the next morning.
Halloween day.
So the police, based on the evidence, based on the timelines, they want to pick up John Douglas White. And not surprisingly, there's an arrest warrant. This is issued, and by 8 a.m. on November 1st, John White was arrested and charged with one count of open murder and one count of first-degree murder.
That's quick. This is technically within 2 days of her murder. They've already honed in on this guy.
And I would say the reason is because when they picked up John White, it didn't take him long to start coming clean.
Now, did he say that he was with her and she fell down, hit her head, and he was trying to help her? Did he say that he was trying to, assist with babysitting and things just went awry? Well, what did he come out with?
Yeah, let's say, within days of John Douglas's arrest, the police learned a lot. They learned that there was a motive for this murder. John White, the pastor of the church you mentioned, he had fantasized about killing someone and then having sex with their body postmortem. I say that the way I said it because it's shocking to me. This is a preacher. This is a pastor, and this was his motive for killing this woman.
He admits to watching pornography of that subject matter, which I've spent a long time on the internet, Aaron. I've never just happened across something like that. And he initially claims that that's what inspired him to commit this murder. But I don't think
just coming across something like that on the internet's going to inspire you to do that. I think there's something much more deep-seated wrong.
Very true. I really think the way this comes across is she just happened to be close by. He knew how to get into her place. I mean, they lived in the same mobile home park. And since he had spent so much time over there, he knew the ins and outs of that place. So she made for a convenient victim for him. Sad to say, he took advantage of this. And if you add in all of the statements by people that knew him, he didn't keep any secrets about his interest in her. And it makes me wonder what's going on with this church. Because, I mean, whose pastor talks this way? Is this a common thing? I mean, maybe people can chime in since you and I don't frequent churches. Is this something that you've ever heard anyone say? Because it just seems like it comes across to me like it's not something that's common.
Well, I would say that most people would probably suggest that within a church or within a community, it would probably be far more, I don't know, a clean environment, much more of a welcoming and wholesome environment, and not a place where the guy in charge is talking about hitting on a young woman or having sex with dead bodies. I don't know. And then I would assume that people in that community would, I don't know, look at somebody with a history, with a past, and just have some reservations about it.
The police feel like the thing that really broke this open, that got this pastor to talk, was that they told him that Rebecca's body would deteriorate and decompose in the weather because it was cold and wet. And it was within a day of them mentioning that he gave them a confession. Not only that, but he took them to where he had left her body. He also gave them details on the actual crime, how he committed it, and what he did after. So like we had said, he entered her trailer, Rebecca's trailer, and when she came down the hallway, he was ready for her with this mallet and started striking her in the head. But he told the police that she made a comment to him, "I know you." So before she was murdered, she knew who was attacking her. And after he knocked her to the floor, he said that he tried to rape her, but he was unable to.
He thinks that he's killed her with this mallet and he's attempting to rape her, but he realizes that she's still breathing.
It was then that he took a zip tie and put it around her neck and cinched it tight so that she couldn't breathe. He loaded up her body and took all of her things that he could find and put them in a bag. He also cleaned up a little bit and threw all that in the bag. And when he loaded it into his vehicle, it actually had torn open some. The Isabella County Sheriff that was in charge of this case, his name was Leo Medeszewski. And one of his questions was Rebecca's 3-year-old son, was he aware of the attack on his mother? It doesn't seem like he was aware.
For most people, you have to understand that they knew each other and he brutally murders this woman and then takes her son to drop him off with his father. Like, just nonchalantly does that because that's what, you know, friends of the family do. And of course, the police, the investigator is going to think, did he harm the boy? Did the boy know what happened? Like, how does this pan out?
And it doesn't seem to be the case that the boy was harmed or anything. And for those of you in Michigan, White took this boy, this little boy, to the parking lot outside of Meijer for his father to pick him up. Meijer's a really big store in Michigan. So there are some things to be decided here. Chief Judge Paul Chamberlain made the decision after looking at John White's criminal history and the likelihood that a conviction would take place in this case, that White was ordered to be held without bond. So he can't get out.
That's really telling when a judge denies bail or bond. It means that they truly believe this guy is a menace to society and cannot be let out.
And he's not wrong. Yeah, we didn't get into this, but since White ambushed Rebecca He didn't even have any scratches on him. She was never able to fight back. So they did a video arraignment in this judge's courtroom from the Isabella County Jail. And John White told this judge, "I already made a plea agreement with the Isabella County Prosecutor's Office." And he said, "Don't talk to me, talk to your attorney." So not only was White confessing, but then he's wanting to tell the judge, "Oh, I'm working out a deal."
Yeah, like this is just a traffic ticket that we're trying to iron out the details on.
So the items, and I want to go through more details here because I'm sure there are people with questions. So we already talked about how he attacked Rebecca, how he attempted to rape her, but he couldn't do it. So then he loaded up her body along with the towels used to clean up and the rubber mallet that he had used into a garbage bag. He also took Rebecca's purse, phone, and car keys and threw them into a trash container at this mobile home park. Now, the items like the mallet and the rags, he dumped those not far from where he had dumped Rebecca. And then he put her car at that barn door parking lot to make it appear as if someone had kidnapped her. But like we said, there was an investigation. And one of the things that they found was blood in both Rebecca's and John White's trailers. There was also blood and a necklace in the back of his truck.
And he's totally confessed to all of it. So there isn't any question here about who did this, but there is a question of who this man truly is. This has all come together pretty quick, but most people would probably question, like, how did this man all of a sudden decide to murder? What snapped inside of him?
Right. And we learn a bit more about him because this sheriff, Medeszewski, spoke with the Associated Press. And one of his quotes is, and this is about John White, he said, "He kept saying, he's a bad person. He's a pastor. He felt bad for the people in the church. I don't recall him being real remorseful at all with regard to the victim or anything else. He just basically said he was attracted to her, thought she was a very cute girl. It's a crazy, tragic situation." Now, he blames pornography. He says that's what prompted him to do this.
So did Ted Bundy.
You know, this church elder who had been part of the hiring process in bringing John White to be a pastor at Christ Community Fellowship, she said church members were absolutely floored by the allegations against him. And she said, "I protested his innocence until I had the absolute news that he confessed. Then he had no leg to stand on." So he had built up a rapport with these people, a trust, and they were ready to fight for him because they just could not believe that he would do this.
Said he was a man of God. They said that they trusted him. They said that he would say things to inspire them, like, "We need to check closely the seeds we sprout in ourselves because nothing can be hidden from God."
This woman, her name's Donna Houghton, she said that John had called her. This is before his arrest. And he said, "Please contact the other church members and start a prayer chain for Rebecca." This is when she was missing. And she said he seemed pretty shook up and that the police were giving him a hard time. Now, here's the thing that gets me, Justin, is she's concerned about John. She's obviously concerned about Rebecca, but she's not putting that together until she learns of the confession. But before all that, she said that the entire congregation was aware that John White had a criminal past when he joined the church. He had been released from prison in 2007. And so here's the thing. He hadn't been clear with them about why he was in prison. He said that he was in prison because he was present when his girlfriend at the time overdosed. And so because of that, the police believed he had a hand in her death and sent him to prison.
I guess the people at this church live very sheltered lives because that would have rang alarm bells with me if somebody told me that, because I would have known they were lying right off the bat. But people at his church, they don't know as much. When somebody dies of an overdose, they can't charge you with anything. Or they just don't. There's Good Samaritan laws out there, and most police officers
don't bother arresting, and most prosecutors don't bother charging you if you're present during an overdose.
He's a pastor. I think he's getting the benefit of the doubt. Now, he went on to tell her that he had found religion in prison and took classes to become a pastor. He said it was his calling in life. And so Donna said, all kinds of people turn around and meet the Lord, and they are a different person. He was doing a lot of good in the community. He was doing a lot of good, and Satan did not want him doing good, and Satan got him. And she went on to talk about all the good things he had done, you know, cleaning her gutters.
Helping old ladies cross the road.
Exactly, exactly.
But he didn't disclose that he'd been arrested for attempted murder and been arrested and charged with murder and a litany of other things that he's done in the past.
And of course, there was a question, is he mentally competent to stand trial? We'd already talked about, you know, his crime. There's something abnormal about him, is there not? How else do you put that?
This is always the tough one, because if somebody is not in the right state of mind, I would question whether or not they are competent to stand trial. But what is a serial killer? What is somebody that has homicidal tendencies? Obviously, they're not right in the mind, but at the same time, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing is wrong, and they still do it.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
I want to cut ahead to his plea deal and his sentencing. It was on March 29th of 2013 when John White accepted a plea deal. And the deal was actually signed a couple days prior, but what it boils down to is his minimum sentence could be no less than 45.8 years in prison and allows the court the discretion to impose a longer sentence than that minimum. So he's kind of at their mercy. They're saying, here's the minimum, but it could be more time than that.
And he's in his 50s, so this is going to put him into his 90s. We can all hope that he's dead by then.
Now, at his sentencing, Sally Gay, Rebecca's mom, read a statement in court, and she asked the judge, Judge Chamberlain, to impose the maximum sentence that he could under the plea sentencing guidelines. And she said, I stand here today to be the voice of Rebecca because she no longer has a voice. And she went on to ask the court, why was John White let out of prison twice before, after committing heinous crimes against two other women? And we're going to get to that. But what he was handed as far as a sentence was 56 years, 3 months minimum to 85 years maximum. So he was going to be, put away for a long time, 56 years and 3 months. That was basically the judge granting Sally Gay her request.
She and a lot of people seem to have been duped by this man, seem to have let this person into their lives, trusted him. And then I wouldn't even say the worst possible scenario happened, a scenario that no one could have even imagined. The worst nightmare happened.
So, Aaron, we said this man had a history. We said that he had been arrested multiple times, and a judge felt that he needed to protect the public from this man, didn't allow bail. Where do we start with John Douglas White?
March 2nd, 1980, in Calhoun County, Michigan. At the time, White was 22 years old. He was married and living in Battle Creek. Now, there was a woman who ended up in Layla Hospital's intensive care unit with multiple stab wounds in her back and in her chest. She was listed in critical condition. The reason she ended up in this hospital was because John White attempted to kill her. He stabbed her many times, and Teresa had to go, she had to undergo extensive surgery. It was on March 21st, 1980, when White was arraigned for this attack, and the police had said that Teresa had suffered 14 knife wounds. This had taken place at 5 p.m. at White's house. See, what he did was he tricked her into going into the basement. He said, "I want to show you my slot car racing setup. It's in my basement." But when she got down there, he started stabbing her. The jury wasted no time in convicting him on a charge of attempted murder. And he was sentenced to 5 to 10 years in prison. And it was recommended that he get mental health counseling while in custody.
I mean, when you coax somebody into your basement and then unprovoked stab them 14 times with a knife, there's something wrong with you. So I would hope that the 10-year sentence would have been the appropriate one. I would have put him away for longer myself, because I think violent crime should be taken more seriously. So what happens to him?
He was sentenced to 5 to 10 years in prison, but he only ended up serving 2 years.
Two years? Hmm.
He was released from prison in 1983. So you might think, how does he attempt to murder someone and get out in 2 years? Now, I already said that he tricked her into going down to his basement. When she was down there, Teresa attempted to leave because she got a bad feeling. And that's when John White stabbed her in the back. So she's trying to get away and he's stabbing her. And she fought back. She tried scratching him. She was biting him. And White told her, while this is happening, "Just lay there. You're nothing but a woman." And he put the knife right up against her throat.
I think that if you're, say, I don't know, in a bar fight or some sort of altercation happens and maybe it goes too far, 2 years might be the more appropriate sentence for something like that. But when you intentionally lie to somebody to murder them, I am absolutely shocked at a 2 year sentence. I'm absolutely appalled that he was let out after 2 years. And obviously, back in the early 80s, victims' rights and sentencing minimums were not even thought of.
When John White put the knife up to Teresa's throat, she actually asked if he would let her pray. And when he took the knife and ran it across her, he actually cut her chin, not her neck. And so she pretended to fall asleep or die or something. When she did that, he laid her out on the basement floor flat, kissed her, held her hand, and then walked away. Now, because she had been screaming, a neighbor had heard that and had called police. The knife she was stabbed with was a 6.5-inch blade. So, attempted murder, he thought she was dead, and he only served 2 years.
What happens after he's released, Aaron?
Well, there's actually someone who knew him in Kalamazoo from 1983 and into the 90s. His name was Frederick Nickel. And They both worked as long-haul truckers, and they both had served in the Navy. Now, Nichols said he knew about White's criminal past, but wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this guy's a changed man. So, but you know, when he looked back on this, he said that there was one moment in the time that they were friends where he noticed something that he thought was odd behavior, you know, bordering on violent. He said there was a way station in Ohio and White was hurling slurs at a female Department of Transportation worker who was making him change a flat tire. She wasn't going to let him just take off.
Seems to be directed at women mostly, all of his anger and hate.
Yes. And Nichols said it was kind of surprising because any other time that he was around White, he seemed, in his words, real gregarious, real easygoing. But he said after this, he realized some other things about White. One of those things is that White seemed to know a lot about the less respectable stops along his route. And so Nicola was saying, you know, he's kind of a perv. He knew how to talk to all the sex workers on the radio. He knew where the seedy semi-truck stops were. And he talked about ports of call while he was in the Navy. Fast forward to July 1994, a woman by the name of Vicky Sue Wall, 26 years old, disappeared from Comstock Township in Kalamazoo County. Now, at this time, White was no longer a long-haul truck driver. He was working maintenance at Textile Systems Incorporated in Oshtemo Township. He was still married with two kids and one on the way. Now, he knew Vicky because they worked together and they were having an affair. So she disappears and the police get involved. They locate surveillance video that showed Vicky getting into a black pickup with a bearded man in the Meyer parking lot on Gull Road. This is the last time they could place her anywhere.
And of course, that's the vehicle he has, and that's a perfect description of him.
So a Kalamazoo County Sheriff's deputy talks to him, and he says at first, John didn't seem to know what he was talking about. You know, he goes, I haven't seen her. And they're like, well, we have this video where you're picking her up. He goes, well, yeah, I picked her up, but I left her after that. And she was alive at that time. But the deputy knew right away, she must be dead.
Well, I mean, did they say she was dead, or were they just asking where she was? And he assumed that.
The deputy assumed she was dead because he's talking with the man they know was last seen with her. And he's saying, oh, I left her alive.
Not the brightest guy to refer to her as I left her alive. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about Frederick Nichol. Well, Frederick Nichol said that it was around this time when John White was talking to him and another guy about suicide because he knew he was headed towards another trial. And he said, I really want to just spare my family the embarrassment of all this. And he said, I'll write some letters and I'll take my life. And White tried to do just that. He took a bunch of pills, drank a lot of booze, but, you know, it didn't work. So later he's being interviewed again, and he admitted that he may have hurt Vicky during one of his blackouts. He said that when he has blackout spells, that he sometimes does violent things. And so the detective asked him, is it possible that you did something to Vicky, that you hurt her? And he said, yes, it was possible. And more comes out. White's wife told a friend that John had multiple personalities and how when he's doing things, he feels like he's watching from somewhere else. So the detectives are trying to collect evidence. They still haven't located Vicky, but they're going through his truck and they check it using luminol because they couldn't see anything obvious. So they used the luminol and it started glowing in several spots. And this detective said he's done a pretty good job of cleaning it. You know, this is early, early days of DNA testing, and a state police DNA expert told detectives that they needed 500 nanograms of blood, which is, as they said, enough to cover part of a dime to be able to test for DNA, and it had to be fresh. Well, John knows he's in trouble. He can feel the police circling him, and he checks himself into the Kalamazoo Regional Psychiatric Hospital. But that's just a convenient place for the police to pick him up at.
At least they know where he is.
Because they arrest and charge him with murder. Now, why did they arrest him? It's because they located Vicky Wall's body. There was a man by the name of Thomas Meskel who is walking down a two-track that was near his parents' home. This is 2 miles from the Meyer store parking lot. And he said, "I noticed 2 drag marks on the side of the drive." He was talking to Target 8 News. He said he followed those marks down, and as he got farther, he saw a white tennis shoe, and there were some weeds that were bent down, and then he found a pair of woman's underwear, and then there was an odor. And right when he noticed the odor, he saw that there was a skull. He, of course, reported this immediately. When they did an autopsy on Vicky Wall's remains, they found that she was very badly decomposed, so they couldn't actually determine a cause of death, but the pathologist said that the manner of death was suggestive of homicide.
So they have John, who is last seen with this woman. They have a connection. They were having a relationship, and he's checked himself into a psychiatric hospital. They found her body. They're going through with these charges, but a prosecutor, he doesn't think it's all wrapped up that tight, does he?
Yeah, they feel like they have some evidence, and I think they probably have enough to take him to court, but they're still working other angles. They would like him to take a polygraph, but of course, now he's really dragging his feet. But, you know, John, he's feeling like this isn't going to work out for him. And he wrote a letter from jail to his wife. And he said, "I am just feeling some relief now that things are starting up." And he said, "I may go to prison for the rest of my life. And I can't help but think it may be for the better for you and the kids." He does go to trial. And he was sentenced to 8 to 15 years in prison after being found guilty of murder. But he only served 12 years. You would like to think that for murder, he would have gotten at least 15, because that was the maximum under the sentence that he was given.
And this is a man who had a prior conviction of attempted murder. This is his second time he's been caught, and he actually did kill this person, and he's getting 12 years. I know drunk drivers who killed people that got longer than this guy, a man who's shown that he intends to murder women.
He had told his wife, "Maybe this is for the best." But after he was sentenced in May of 1995, he said that Vicky's death was a tragic accident. And he said, "I love Vicky."
Of course, he will go on to be paroled and released and start his life again as a pastor at the Christ Community Fellowship Church in Mount Pleasant.
And he started dating Sally Gay, and they got engaged and so on and so forth, just like what we had talked about. But, you know, this case really stood out to me, Justin, because people had some idea that he had a criminal past, that he had been to prison, but everyone just took him at his word. He was allowed to frame his sentences, his prison time, the way he wanted to, so that he could continue to live the way he wanted to live. And eventually planned the murder of Rebecca Gay.
You had mentioned they gave him the benefit of the doubt. It's always interesting because nowadays we have true crime podcasts. We have shows like Catfish. We have tons of resources for people to question others, and we give them the resources to do background checks and vet people. And it just seems that nobody in this town of Mount Pleasant questioned this guy in the slightest. And they welcomed him into their homes. They took him at his word, let him take their children to go to Halloween parties and stuff. I don't know what to say to that, because no one would think somebody's capable of the things this man did. And personally, no one would probably believe or think that someone could attempt to murder someone and actually murder someone and still be walking around on the street. But here we are. I don't know how honest he was, but he did tell them that he had a history. He did tell them that he had served time. And I know everyone deserves a second chance, but I wonder how many people would have given him a second chance if they knew the entirety of the truth.
We're also brought to you by Sleep Number. Daylight saving is about to end, and you know what that means. Chaos, dogs and cats living together, and your sleep schedule getting screwed up. But it doesn't have to be that way if you sleep on a Sleep Number bed. According to Sleep Number research, sleepers such as myself, who sleep on a Sleep IQ smart bed, slept the longest night of daylight saving time in the fall, 8.5 hours compared to 7 hours and 45 minutes. Your Sleep IQ app gives you a score on how you've slept that night. My current score, 89. I like to set up my sleep-wake cycle, set a disciplined schedule, ultimately getting the most comfort out of my bed, choosing the best firmness, and putting my stupid phone away at a set time. Exposure to artificial light and all of those electronic devices and their notifications, it's terrible. You spend a third of your life in bed, so don't overlook one of the most common and addressed solutions for sleeping. It's your mattress. I love my Sleep Number bed. I know you will too. Discover special offers now for a limited time at your local Sleep Number store or at sleepnumber.com/GenY. Sleep Number. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep.
4 months after John White was sentenced for the murder of Rebecca Gay, prison officials found him hanging from his cell. They attempted to revive him, but they ended up pronouncing him dead at 4:38 a.m. on August 28th, 2013.
And he took the easy way out because he knew he was going to serve the rest of his life behind bars, and he knew that our prison systems are run by the prisoners, and for his crimes, he was going to get a little extra punishment from the people he would share cells with.
Yeah, I really believe that he had these sick fantasies and he would never be able to do them again. This sentence was going to put him, this was going to put him in prison for the rest of his life. So he had no reason to live anymore. Rebecca's sister, Deborah, really wanted the creation of a violent offender registry because she really believed that Rebecca, you know, and presumably Sally, if they had known about White's true past, then maybe this never would have happened. Because, you know, if Sally really knew why he had been to prison, would she have gotten engaged to him? I mean, what do you think?
I would hope not.
I like how you put that because that's how I feel. I feel like you never know. There are people who are always willing, you know, because of love, to forgive and forget just about anything. But they trusted John White. I mean, he was allowed to be alone with Sally's grandchild, a 3-year-old boy. Rebecca trusted him. So this is an important thing. It's one of those things that happens when there's a terrible loss in a family due to murder. And there's always a question of what could we have done differently? What could we do to help people moving forward? So Deborah was right. She feels like people should know who they're dealing with. There should be a registry so that you can look it up. What were they in prison for? And of course, as we know now, that's something you can do. You can look people up. For a while there, I was looking up someone who had stalked me when I was just a teenager in Michigan. You know, there was someone that would go by where I worked and talk with me and tell me things that, you know, made me uncomfortable. And he later got arrested for molesting children.
Keep tabs on him.
So I would look him up for years. I think he was let out in 2011 or 12. I have no idea what's going on now because I haven't looked him up in a long time. But I think it's a great thing. If you commit crimes like this, then people should be able to know because that knowledge can save your life. It gives you a better chance anyway because it's not fair. This guy can come along and lie to you. He can tell you everything he wants you to know, and then he gets to work his way in and then do this kind of damage. And what this comes down to is it was preventable, I believe. And that's what Deborah believes.
It absolutely was preventable. I think the first two courts and parole boards, they could have done more. And I know I've heard a lot of people say there weren't mandatory minimums or sentencing guidelines back then. So what? A judge doesn't know better than to sentence somebody? Apparently, that's what sentencing guidelines are for, is judges don't know what they're doing. Because this case is a prime example of that. You know, if you put somebody away for drugs, you put somebody away for nonviolent crimes for longer than somebody who is an attempted murderer and convicted murderer, it's like, what are you doing? And at that point, I just wonder, like, what's the point of the judge if that's how they're going to rule in cases? And I know that there's laws now that they've put in place. I know there are sentencing guidelines that are put in place, but there are still plea deals. There are still things that can happen in a courtroom between a defense attorney and a prosecutor. Maybe they plea that down. So the sentencing guideline no longer applies. Maybe they are able to get out of an appropriate sentence because they have enough money to do that.
How do you explain John White? Because he didn't have the money.
I explain him by the judges didn't know what the hell they were doing. Judges should have done the right thing. They should have put this man away. He should have never gotten out that second time. And here we are. Rebecca's dead. They finally did the right thing. They put him away for life. No chance of parole. Oh my God.
Well, actually, he would have been eligible for parole, but his sentence was so long that by that point, you know, we're not even sure he would have been alive at that point. But yeah, but that's where his prior victims, there was no justice for them. Teresa Morris, no justice. What, 2 years for an attack that almost killed her? And then Vicky Wall, murdered. He says it's an accident. Nobody believes that. And he gets 12 years. So for all these crimes, it's like he just kept slipping through. And I would hope that the lessons were learned here so that we don't have a repeat of this. I mean, we haven't covered a ton of cases in Michigan, so we can't really look around and say, what about this one? What about that one? But it's just unbelievable that a guy only got 14 years for an attempted murder and a murder and was free to do this terrible crime to Rebecca Gay.
I'm sure if we looked up those other two judges, we could pull how they sentence people on a lot of different cases. And I'm sure we could find somebody who did next to nothing serve more time than John White.
I mean, you and I believe that people should be given chances to reform, chances to start over again. But if you look over the details of what he did, and granted, Sally Gay and the others who learned of John White's past accepted his explanation of his past. Is it possible they could have discovered what he had done? I think so. It's possible, yes. But they didn't bother. They just said, yeah, he had some problems and he sorted himself out and he found God. And that was good enough. That's why we shouldn't just implicitly trust people, right?
I hate to be the person that says that. I hate to sound jaded or just untrusting of others or the person to tell other people you shouldn't trust people, but somebody says they've spent time in prison. You can look that up and you can see why they spent time in prison. It takes 5 minutes to go look it up online and see if they're telling the truth. See if you agree with what happened to them. And if they're not telling the truth, then, well, I might distance myself from that person. People go to prison all the time for the dumbest stuff. I'm not trying to say if somebody's been to prison, they're a bad person. I know a lot of people that have been to prison. I'm saying if they lie about it or if they try to cover up something that's a little bit more serious than what they actually went for, that's when you need to
be careful.
Be careful.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
Thank you.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.